Joe should be calling right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yes, we're going to be hearing from Joe Olam, Muscle Car Confidential, the confession of a muscle car tester. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on with the Motormouths.
This is Joe Oldham.
Hey, Joe.
Hey. Hi,
Sorry
Joe.
For the wait, Joe.
Unfortunately, we have one line, and we do a dance on the head of a pin every time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing very well, very
good.
Well. When Ray had told me, Joe, that you would be a guest on the show, I was literally excited to talk to you because basically, you know, I'm one of those guys that said, I've read your work when I was younger. I like to say when I was younger. I read your work, and I used to love how you would describe something that we cherish so well, and you would describe it truthfully in such what would you say? Real...
No BS,
right. I was trying to think of a way to put it. Yeah, and that to me was extraordinary.
Thank you.
Welcome you to Motormouth Radio. How you been?
Thank you. I've been good. It's good to be with you guys today. I don't know what the weather is there, but where I'm calling you from, it's bright and sunny and about 70 degrees.
So you must be down south.
I'm in California.
Oh!
Joe, we had a real nice reprieve. I went out to let my dog out this morning, and I said, is it like time travel? It's like 56 degrees out there this morning, which feels like summertime, which is
beautiful.
Great. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's nice over here now. But
time to get a car out and take it to a car show.
And we'll go street racing.
There you go.
So Joe, your book, this book you wrote, Muscle Car Confidential: Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver, really rocked me on my heels when I read it. I couldn't stop reading this book.
Well, it was fun to put together because it gave me the opportunity, obviously, to go back in my own mind to when I was a young man and you know, having these experiences as you know, was part of my job, but also it was so much fun. And I got to look through all my old photos and my old notes, and so it was a great thing for me personally to put together. And that the reaction to it has been, you know, as you just described what you had, a lot of people have enjoyed reading it. So it's been a cool experience.
Yeah, the only thing better would be a movie version. I'll tell you what, I'll help you recreate it if you want to come back out this way. We'll put some guys together and in-car cameras.
Yeah, I think we can only get a team of about 2,500 people that would be interested in something like that. That's for sure.
We'll have to rebuild some things like the Big Bow Wow and a Piece of City on Cross Bay Boulevard.
Mitchell's Hamburgers.
Tear down some houses and buildings and stuff. You know?
Yeah, Cross Bay Boulevard at the time was pretty barren, wasn't it?
It was really, you know, when you turned off from the Southern State Parkway and got on, from there all the way south into Rockaway was really just barren swampland. There, you know, there were a couple of buildings right there at the intersection of the parkway, and then a little further down as you were heading south on the right-hand side, there was the Big Bow Wow for hot dogs and hamburgers. And Pizza City, and then all the way from there, all the way into the Rockaways was just swampland and you know, water. And so it was really a perfect place to be illegal, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of other illegal activity going on down there, too.
And, you know, yeah, that's true. And you know what? There were no places for the cops to hide either. It was just flat, you know, land. I mean, when it was dark, you couldn't see them, but they couldn't park on the side because it was swampland. So it was pretty cool. They had to chase you down. That was the thing. And I mean, they did. They did have it closed down for many years then afterwards. But for a while there, it was just some great nights and a lot of fun. And because it was pretty barren, I hate to say this, but it was pretty safe, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like some of the more crowded venues that were, you know, were staging street races at that time where the crowds of people were standing right there on the side, and if somebody, you know, lost a wheel or fishtailed it, there could have been some bad accidents. But as it went, I mean, it was illegal, and it was pretty stupid and all those things that you do when you're young, but it was relatively safe, let me put it that way.
But the interesting thing, Joe, is you were actually getting paid to do this.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Completely.
I still think back on those days. In fact, I remember, you know, cruising down Cross Bay or the connecting highway or something in some brand new, you know, muscle car that had just been handed to me, and thinking to myself, I'm getting paid to do this tonight, you know?
Now, they weren't called muscle cars then. They were just cars.
That's right. That's relatively a new term, a late term that only started being used maybe like 15 or 20 years ago. Back then, they were called supercars.
Okay.
Like today, supercars are the real exotic Lamborghinis and Ferraris. But back then, a supercar was an intermediate-sized body style, like a Pontiac Tempest or a Plymouth Satellite, with the big engine from the higher-line cars stuffed into it. Like in Pontiac's case, the intermediate was a Tempest, and the high line was the Bonneville, a much bigger car.
Right, right.
And so, you know, they put the 389 V8 from the Bonneville in the Tempest body, and that's primarily, you know, the beginning of the muscle car era with the GTO. That's what the GTO was.
Sure.
And then, of course, from there it took off. They were all special engines that were just created for the muscle cars, and you know, it just went from there. But primarily it was the intermediate body style with the big engine stuffed in, and they were called supercars. And in fact, one of the magazines that I wrote for back then, published by Magnum Royal, was called Speed and Supercar. And another one was called Supercars Annual, because that's what they were called then.
Right. And, of course, you know, you have the Yanko, which their logo was a Y with an S and a C on either side of it, which stood for Yanko Supercars.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
So,
you know, that's what they were called. And the term muscle car, as I said, was a relatively new thing that came along, you know, some years ago. And it was more all-encompassing also. Back then, you know, we called the intermediate supercars, then there were sports cars, then there were pony cars, the Mustangs and the Firebirds and so forth.
Right.
So there were these kind of different segments of the high-performance genre. Today, they're all lumped together and called muscle cars.
True.
Joe, to get the sampling of cars that you included in your book, how many did you have to leave out?
You know, I left out a ton. I could really do another two or three books.
It was
one of the hardest things was to choose what I included and what I left out. And what I tried to do, you know, the publisher wanted kind of a well-rounded selection of cars, so I tried to include some from each make
and different
variants. So it was tough. I have a lot of material still left in my files. By the way, the thing about that book, I don't know if I ever told you, Ray, but when I retired in 2004, I retired. I didn't want to work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But this publisher, Motor Books, it's called Motor Books Incorporated.
Right.
One of the editors there heard that I had retired and knew that. Before I was the editor of Popular Mechanics for many years, I did this. Mm-hmm. I did the muscle car stuff for magazines. And, you know, he was sending me emails and asking me if I wanted to write a book. And I really, you know, I didn't want. If I wanted to keep working, I would have kept working. That was my attitude. But he said, you know, you were back. Maybe you want to do something with muscle cars, if not modern stuff. You know, you did that, too, back in the day. And that kind of lit a bulb in my mind. And I remembered that when I was testing these cars, I saved all the photos I took.
That's great.
And I saved all my notes from every test. I'm kind of a pack rat, I guess. So
join the club.
Yep.
Yeah, so I had all these notes and all these photos, and that's why it was fun for me to do the book, because I got a chance to go back and look through all that material that I had saved.
Did the notes belie or change your memory of any of these cars, or was it pretty much how you remembered the...
It was pretty much how I remembered. I was surprised by a couple of things I came across, like...
Okay.
a car I didn't include in the book. It was a 68 Charger with a Hemi engine.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
When I remember looking through the notes and saying, hey, this Hemi engine car actually ran well on the street, because most of them didn't, you know. The Hemi was a detuned race engine. It had these huge ports, gigantic valves, 8 barrels of carburation.
Right.
It really didn't make any low-end torque on the street.
Sure.
So a good running 440 would just, you know, run it down every time. But this one happened to run very well. And, you know, that was one of the things that I hadn't remembered. I had to lump them all into, you know, didn't run well on the street category. So it gave me a chance to, you know, relive those great old days, I'll tell you.
I'm sure you remembered the problems you had with that AMC, right? The Javelin was fit and finished.
It's funny. We wanted to like that car.
Mm-hmm.
Myself and the other guys at the magazine, Marty Shore was my boss. He was the editorial director. A guy named Fred McArod, who still does public relations work in the automotive field for General Motors. We were a little pool of guys in this office, and we produced these magazines. And we always liked AMC cars. We even had a Javelin project car. They loaned us a car for a year, and we customized it and put on different wheels. And, you know, project cars, you tweak the engines and whatever. And we liked AMC cars. But this Javelin, the Javelin / AMX, when they combined the two models, it literally fell apart around us.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the guys had the car one day, and he pulls up to a light, and he feels a clump, and the thing kind of drops. And the wheel goes rolling by him through the intersection, the right rear wheel. Mm. It just had broken off.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, he took a picture of the thing laying on the ground, and we ran the picture.
Right.
And when that story came out in the magazine, all hell broke loose out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where AMC was located.
In fact, if people want to see that, Joe, it's on page 150 in your book.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now.
And the wheel broken off?
Yeah. Now, you were a big Pontiac guy back in the day, correct?
I was, yeah. My first real car, you know, I had some clunkers, but my first real car was a 59 Pontiac that I put on tri-power and put bucket seats and a floor shift and 488 gears. So I ran it a lot, you know, on the street, and it ran well, and it endeared me to Pontiacs from then on.
Joe, I wonder if you can hang on with us for a bit. We're going to take a break. We'll keep you on during the break, and we'll come back, and I want to talk about another very special car that you owned.
Sure.
All right.
And, Joe, we also want to talk about that Hemi Cuda.
Yeah, of course.
That's a really interesting story.
Yes,
that's a great one.
That's one that Ray actually mentioned to me, and I said, oh, yeah, the one with the transmission trouble. And Ray was like, he said, yeah. And that, the funny thing was, I had to dig through my brain to come up with that information that I had read when you actually wrote the article. I was a kid.
That's such an interesting story.
Joe Olem, Muscle Car Confidential, what a great book. We're going to keep you on a little bit. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about all those things and more here at Motor Mouth Radio. So keep it where you got it.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said more.
This is a potted plant. You can't see it because this is radio.
You're listening to the Motor Mouths.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio, and we are talking to a very special guest here, Joe Olem, Muscle Car Confidential. The Confessions of a what? Muscle car road tester?
Confessions of a muscle car test driver.
Test driver, right. Yes.
You know, Joe, one of the beauty of this book, one of the right in the foreword written by your son Scott,
yeah,
where he describes how, you know, as a kid you'd come home and you always had cool cars in the driveway.
Yeah.
You know, there was always, and that's gotta be such a great memory for him. And I'm sure the neighbors might at the time might have had some memories as well,
yeah,
as I know mine have over the years.
The neighbors were really funny. When we moved from Rego Park, Queens, when we were first married, we moved to Old Bridge, New Jersey.
Okay.
And, you know, the cars were always in the driveway. And, you know, all of a sudden there's this guy on the block. He's got like six brand new cars in his driveway.
Yeah.
So one day, one of my neighbors came over and said, you know, hi, I'm Charlie from up the street. You know, welcome to the neighborhood. Are you a new car dealer or a used car dealer? I notice you always have, like, different cars in your driveway, and there's always four or five of them.
You tell them, no, I work in sanitation. What's it to you? Get off my lawn. Something like that.
Right. I'm right. In waste management.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And your name is, sir?
Yeah. What house is yours? Formerly? Because I got a cousin who does, right, you know, rip-outs.
Right, before the fire.
Yeah.
It's funny, and when people used to come to visit, they knew the house was someplace on the block, but when they saw all the burnout marks, they knew that was the house.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, if it wasn't yours, it was certainly Ray's, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, where I grew up, we had the same thing in front. You know, friends would pull up, Joe, and, you know, just roll by the house to see if you were home. And if you weren't, they would just, you know, dump the clutch or stall up the automatic and leave a nice set of stripes in the street. Just to let you know they were there.
That's right. They left their calling card to let you know they were around.
In fact, I was doing that years ago. I had a Harley Davidson motorcycle. It was a little bit of a hot rod.
Uh-huh.
And I would come in my driveway, and in the front couple feet, that maybe the first 10 feet were concrete, and it went to asphalt.
Right.
And I'd lay up on that concrete, bring it up to like 3,600, dump the clutch, and leave a nice little stripe of rubber. And I kept moving, you know, over to the right and to the left. And my wife said to me one day, well, what are you doing? What were you doing? I said, I'm outside pinstriping the driveway. And she thinks, you know, she thought I was out there with a brush. I'm like, no. I'm pinstriping it with rubber.
Right, a black stripe.
Exactly.
Kind of wide.
A true car guy.
Of course. But anyway, Joe, you know, before we get to that CUDA, you had the pinnacle in most guys' impression of a supercar, you know, when you actually had that Baldwin Motion Camaro.
Ooh.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny how I came to buy that car. Of course, I had been around them because Joel Rosen started building cars like that in 1967 when the Camaro first was introduced. So in 67 and 68, he was building those cars and selling them through Baldwin Chevrolet out on Long Island. And unfortunately, neither of those businesses exists on Long Island anymore, although Motion Performance has been reborn down in Florida. I don't know if you guys are, you've probably heard about that too, but,
right.
So he was building cars, mostly Camaros, and I'd go out and do some stories and drive them, and, you know, they were great cars to drive, but I was still a Pontiac guy, so in 68, I bought a new GTO.
Right.
It was one of the few cars they built that year with the 400 HO engine.
Right.
And a 4-speed stick. Most of the cars they built that year were automatic. So, right. You know, I didn't know it then, but I had a rare car, but you know what? It did not run. 68, if you remember, was the first year of emission controls.
Right.
So the ignition was way retarded. The carburation was all leaned out. There was a smog pump. It used to spit and choke, and nobody had yet figured out you got to recurve the distributor, you got to rejet the carburetor, put in the different metering rods in the quadrajet.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
It wasn't figured out yet because it was a new thing that was on these new cars.
Yeah. Right. Joel Rosen figured it out, though.
Yeah, sure did.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I couldn't get the thing to run. I took it to a couple of shops and whatever. I got disgusted. So I went to the new car previews in Detroit that summer, and I saw the 69 Camaro.
Hmm.
And I said, you know, this is it. I got to have one of these. So when I went back to New York, you know, I called up Joel Rosen and I said, I got to have a 69 SS-427. He said, all right, you know, and in those days, he'd build anything you wanted. Just keep peeling off the $100 bill. That's how we worked.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So we spec'd out a car that was going to be something that I could still drive on the street, and, you know, not a ridiculous car that you could only run on the track. And it was a beautiful car, and, you know, if you get the book, it's actually doing a burnout on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
The one time I took it to the track. Unfortunately, that car was stolen from me about
right.
6 months after I got it. So
yeah.
it had a short lifespan in the Oldham household.
Right, right.
But it's still a car that, you know, people remember, like yourself,
mm-hmm.
and they talk to me about it. And it's funny, I see blogs now on the internet where these guys talk about Joe Oldham's Motion Camaro.
Really?
Wow.
That's the blog, you know.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, people say, oh, no, it had different wheels first, you know.
Yeah.
It happens to be the car that Motion Performance used in all their advertising that year.
Right.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was, I don't know if you remember that Wanted poster. That
yes.
One of their,
yes.
That was actually my car. I let them use it before they turned it.
Yeah.
The final version where I had the SS stripes taken off and
yeah.
and Keystone wheels put on. He, you know, he
yeah,
had
yeah.
Americans.
Yeah.
So it was actually that car, and it was in some other ads also, besides just being my own car, you know, that
yeah.
I did some articles on. But they got it from me one day, and we were still living in Rego Park at the time, and I used to park in an underground garage under the building. I guess they saw me go in, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I come down to go to dinner with my wife one night, and there are two guys, right, around the car, like working a hanger in there and whatever. So I go running over, I jump on one guy, I he went down, the other guy hit me with something, I don't know what it was.
Oh my gosh.
I went down and they ran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saved the car.
Right.
But for how long?
Well, that was it. Then every night after that, like every 45 minutes, I used to go down with a jack
to see
if they had come back, you know?
Yeah.
It was a little tense for a while. Then one morning, I come down, and sure enough, it was gone.
Oh, boy.
And it figures all the cars you drove that were not yours that you could have explained away, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, your own personal car gets jacked on you.
Good point. Exactly
yeah.
right. Yes.
Wow.
You know what I'm going to do, Joe? When I leave here today, it's such a nice day. I have my convertible. I'm going to drive by the site of Baldwin Motion, and I'm going to take a picture of what it is today, and I'm going to email it to you. I'll show you what
oh,
it is
yeah.
today.
I'd love to see what's there now. I remember the address, 598
yeah, yeah.
Sunrise Highway.
Sure. And in fact, that,
I was there so many times.
Yeah. You know, I grew up on the South Shore in Nassau County, and right there, we call that stretch the Baldwin Strip.
Oh, really?
Because
yeah.
from one light right there in Baldwin up to the next light, it was a nice long stretch, and that's
right.
where we did a lot of off street racing.
There you go, right.
So, and we went right by Motion, you know, probably top
yeah.
of third gear.
And that's right, and Sunrise Highway was so nice and wide.
Yeah, yeah,
it sure
really
was.
A lot of room.
Can you tell us a little bit about that Hemi Cuda
mm-hmm.
that you tested back in 1970?
You know, I love this story because of the way it turns out. First of all, I have to say, it was a great job I had, but there were some days when it was just a job.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get through it, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm sure you love your job, but there were some days you just want to get it over with and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Hemi Cuda, there were several days when I had that car that was like that, because first of all, I just said it. I never liked driving Hemi cars. They didn't run that well on the street,
right
off the showroom floor. So I get assigned by my boss, Marty Shore, go get one of those new Barracudas. You know, that was the year they changed the body style into the really pretty
yeah.
Barracuda
yeah.
style.
Mm-hmm.
It's a convertible with a street Hemi engine, a new combination. Go take the car. You know, take it to Raceway Park, test it, run it on the street if you can, you know, do a whole write-up on it. I said, okay, so Friday night I go to the garage where Chrysler keeps its cars. The guy points the car out to me. It's over in the corner. I walk over. Right away, I know there's a problem. There's red fluid all over the floor of the garage under the car. So, you know, I go under. I look at it. It's obviously transmission fluid. So it starts up. It just barely goes into gear. That's how empty it was. I get it to a gas station. I fill it up with transmission fluid. Get it home. The next morning, I look under. There's a little bit of fluid. I fill it up again. I go to Raceway Park in Englishtown. I do some photography right away because I had in my mind this car was going to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
So I said, let me get something in the can. So no matter what happens, I have some still photos of it. You know, we actually, we got some good photos, you know, running gentle yeah. shots. You know, we were easy with the car. So I say, okay, let's do a burnout. I have the guy who was with me pulls to the line. First run, boom, the seal that was leaking blows out.
Sure.
Transmission fluid all over the starting line.
Oh, they like that at the track.
Oh, yeah, the Knapp brothers, who were great to me, Vinny and Rich, they were nice guys, let me use the track whenever I wanted. You know, I had to call them. They had to clean up the mess.
Yeah, they were loving you now.
Oh, man. So I was... I get a flatbed, get it back to the garage. About a week later, the PR guy calls me. Okay, it's all ready for you, you know. I go back. I look under. It's still leaking, but it's not like pouring out. So I figure, okay, you know, let me get this thing done and over with.
And this is a brand new car.
This is a brand new car.
Yeah.
In fact, it was so new. It turned out, I didn't know it that day, but it turned out it was the first Barracuda convertible built for the 1970 model year, okay?
Wow.
This was in the fall of 69 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
They used to come out in October,
right?
The cars for the following model year. So I get it to the track, you know, it's not really shifting well, but I get through the test, we do burnout shots, I get all the photography. And, you know, I just wanted to get rid of it, you know. So I give the car back. Now, it turns out, now this is what, 70, this is like 40 years later, we can look back, and this is what we know about that particular car. It was the first Hemi Barracuda convertible they built that year.
Wow.
Now, wait, they only built 14 of them the whole year.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how rare that combination was.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only red-on-red car they made that year.
Yes. Right.
So it became a very famous car because there were only 14 of them to begin with and was the only red one with a red interior, right?
Actually, you know, Joe, that was red-on-red-on-red if you count the tranny fluid on the floor, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Good point.
Okay.
Good point. So... this car becomes famous. The Danbury Mint used it to make their model.
I have the model, yeah.
Okay. Wow. So it became a real, I mean, a collector car among collector cars.
Right.
So, of course, that day when it blew the transmission, I couldn't give a damn. I just wanted to get the thing back to the garage, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's a collector's item. So 10 years later, my friend and I are walking down the row of collector cars at a car show, and I see the nose of a red Barracuda up ahead.
Right.
I say, Cliff, you know, that looks like that car I tested.
That looks like that piece of junk that I tested.
So we go up to it, and sure enough, it's a red-on-red convertible, and the guy has, as part of his display, has my article framed, you know, standing next to it. And I said, is this that? He says, yeah, that's the actual car they used to test. So I said, there's only one way to tell. I crawl under. You know, the thing was still leaking transmission fluid from the same seal. I swear to God. So I knew it was the actual car.
Sure.
And I started talking to the guy. I told him, that's my article. I wrote it, blah, blah, blah. He asked me to sign it. I signed it for him.
Wow.
So then he says, you know, I paid $150,000 for this car.
You got a bargain.
The list price was, as I remember, was like $4,800,
yeah, right.
Something like that. He paid $150,000.
Sure. Right.
Said, wow. You know, I should have bought it that day instead of sending it back on the flatbed.
Right. Now, didn't he, I seem to remember reading in the article that he, in the book, that the car along the way had gotten stripes put on it, and then he took the stripes back off?
That was the next
okay.
owner.
All right.
It went through some other hands, and along the way, and again, you know, this is a famous collector car. Now it's going through auctions. It's rising in price every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So finally, a guy named Bill Weeman, who's a famous Mopar collector, buys the car, and he has it restored, and he knows that all the Hemi Cudas had that hockey stripe on the back fender.
Right.
So he has them put on.
Okay.
Now, the day I tested that car, it did not have those because I found out later the press officer in New York, the PR guy, did not like them. Mm. So when he got the car from the factory, he had them taken off at a local dealership. In fact, Rockville Center Dodge out on Long Island used to do all the prep work for the Chrysler office here in New York. So he had the stripes taken off. He didn't like them. This guy had them put on. In any case, he calls my friend Cliff Bromer, who's the editor of Mopar Action Magazine, and he says, hey, you know that car that your friend Joe Oldham tested like 40 years ago? He said, I bought the car. I paid $2 million for it.
Whoa.
And I'm having it restored. Do you think Joe would like to drive it again?
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
So my friend Cliff calls me up. The guy, by the way, lives in Phoenix, in Scottsdale, actually.
Oh, right.
Which is, you know, you can drive it from here where I live now.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I drive over there, Cliff flies in. The guy has me, you know, as his guest for 2 days. It was really weird. Not only did I drive, first of all, I was just looking at it again 40 years later.
Right.
And you know what? The interior had been fine, so it was original. He didn't have it redone.
Nice.
So I sat in the car, and I was thinking, my butt is in the exact same seat on the same seat cover that it was in 40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's weird. You know?
Wow.
So the next day, you know, I got there a little late. It was at night. And by the way, this is a funny story. He has his own museum behind his house. He's got about 40 Mopars in there.
Oh, my gosh.
So they tell me, wait for Bill, and he'll be in the museum in a minute. So I go in. I see the car sitting there. I couldn't help it. I had to look under to see if it was still leaky.
Was it?
It wasn't. No, they finally stopped the leak when they had this restoration done. But at that moment, he walks in and sees me looking under, and he says, Joe, what are you looking for, transmission fluid?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the guy, he never met me before, you know, and he says that. And he had in his hand the magazine with my original article in it. He had gotten a copy.
He should have handed you the original seal out of the transmission.
Yeah, he should have. That would have been a real keepsake.
Yeah.
But the next day, we went out to a local drag strip to do some photography, and he said, go ahead, drive it out, you know. So on the way, I mean, $2 million. I was scared.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
You know, I'm baby in the car, and he says, Joe, wait a minute. Pull over to the side of the road right now. I pull over. He says, what's the matter? I said, nothing. He says, well, why are you acting so nervous? And he says, I want you to get on the car like you would have back in the day.
Like you did in 69.
He said, I want you to get on the car. I want you to do burnouts later. I want you to drive it just the way you drove it that day.
Wow. Man's got more guts than brains, that's for sure.
Yeah, he said, if anything breaks, we'll have it fixed. Hey, it's beautiful to be rich, you know.
Yeah sure is.
I guess. I wouldn't know.
So I said, fine, you know. So I got on it. We did a burnout off the side of the road, back on. I was gunning it, open up all 8 barrels, you know, on the two Carter carbs, so
yeah.
We had a great time. We got to the track. We did burnouts. But, you know, I swear to God, the transmission still didn't feel right.
You know, I say all along, Joe, the thing should have had a four-speed with a pistol grip in it.
Yes, right.
You know?
Right.
And through that whole thing, the training didn't feel right.
I want to mention one thing. On page 94 in your book, you were talking about a GTO, the 69 GTO judge.
Yeah.
And this is the quote of the book for me. When Jim Wangers said they'd hand-built two judges, prototypes. One was delivered to Motor Trend on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And they said, you were the premier auto writer about all things Pontiac. Would you like to try the other? And the quote was, no disrespect to your wife, of course, he said, hell, would I like to screw Bo Derek?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that to me epitomizes the Joe Oldham. I mean, that's just, you know, you write what you feel. And yeah. I thought that was great.
Joe,
just edited it on in the book. It doesn't say screw.
Well, in my book, it does.
Yeah. Joe, we would love to talk to you for another 6 hours more, but believe me, we have another minute, and that's really it. We're going to get bitten by the clock here.
Wow, we went fast.
We sure did. Can we talk to you again? Can we continue this other time?
Absolutely.
That would be great.
You have to do one favor, though.
Sure.
Plug my book. Just tell people if they want to buy it, they can go to motorbooks.com, and it's right there. That's the publisher's website.
Joe, we also have a link on motormouthradio.com under the Traveling Authors series, and we'll have a link to your book right up on there as well where
Beautiful.
People can
Thank
find it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll be in touch. I'll send you out that picture this evening.
Yes.
Fabulous.
And we would
love talking to you guys.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Joe. We will talk to you very soon.
Hey, I miss Long Island, too.
And it misses you as well, Joe.
It sure does.
Could use you around here.
Yeah. We need a little bit more road racers in the vicinity.
All right, I'll meet you at the Bow Wow.
You got it.
You got it.
White Castle, maybe. Thanks, Joe.
Take care, Joe. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's a guy I don't mind giving the show to.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Joe Oldham, Confessions of Muscle Car Confidential. Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver. It's
what
a
job.
Yeah, exactly. And what a book.
And what a man.
Yeah,
I tell you, and the fact that he remembers it all, too, it's just a treat to be able to speak with a guy like that.
Incredible. Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. We'll talk on Thursday.
Thursday!
This is Motormouth Radio. Bye-bye.
See ya.